This is your Polycast for Tuesday, October 4th, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, striking nurses reject a contract offer, and Minneapolis officials pledge to fight downtown crime. Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders will be in Minnesota today to campaign for his former rival Hillary Clinton. He's trying to fire up college students in Minneapolis and Duluth to vote. So far, they are lacking in enthusiasm for the Democratic ticket. We'll have more here tomorrow. Striking Allina nurses have voted down another contract proposal, further extending an already month-long strike at five Twin Cities hospitals. The Minnesota Nurses Association did not release vote totals, but described the result as a resounding rejection of Allina Health's offer. Allina said it was disappointed by the vote and urged a speedy return to the bargaining table. Lorna Benson has more.
The walkout is fast approaching the longest nursing strike in state history that lasted 38 days in 1984. But union leaders say, judging by Monday's vote, nurses don't appear to be overly concerned. Executive Director Rose Roach says nurses sent a clear message that they won't return to work until they get a better contract.
This was a deliberate choice by the members. Each of them voted with their conscience and with their patients and their families in mind.
Health insurance has been the focus of negotiations for the past 8 months, as Allina has attempted to shift nurses from their union-only plans to less expensive corporate insurance. The issue has been a major sticking point in negotiations. Nurse leaders say they're still unhappy with the terms of that transition. However, they say the discussion has completely overshadowed their own contract priorities. Bonnie Engeldorf is vice president with the Nurses Union.
We didn't go to the table to talk about health insurance. We went to the table to address our staffing concerns, and that didn't happen.
The union says in future contract negotiations with Allina, addressing nurses' staffing concerns will be a priority. The nurses have proposed freeing up charge nurses from patient duties so they can be available to help other nurses they oversee. Allina rejected that scenario, calling it a one-size-fits-all approach. But the company said it would be willing to set up a committee to look at the issue. Spokesman David Canahan says Allina offered a fair contract that included work safety provisions that the union wanted, plus a wage increase, bonuses, and health insurance options that wouldn't change over the course of the three-year contract.
It's simply unrealistic to provide what the union was asking for, which was essentially a guarantee that there would be no changes made to any health insurance plans forever. That's just not the world we live in.
Canahan says Allina negotiators are prepared to go back to the bargaining table as soon as the union offers a new counterproposal.
We've got to get back to the table and solve these issues. The issues are not solved by continuing to strike and just prolonging this.
The union said it hasn't set a timeline for resuming negotiations. Nurses have already lost more during the strike than they can make up in wage increases and other benefits. On Saturday, nurses lost their health insurance. They're now on the hook for the entire premium. The strike has also been costly for Allina. The company won't say what it spent on replacement workers, but during a one-week walkout in June, Allina spent $20 million. Covering health, I'm Lorna Benson, Minnesota Public Radio News.
A Republican state House candidate from Burnsville is due in court today on suspicion of felony domestic assault, Brian Baxt reports.
Brad Gerton was booked into the Dakota County Jail on probable cause that he tried to strangle a relative. Jail roster details do not provide a specific account of the incident, including which family member Gerton is accused of assaulting. Gerton is running for the seat now held by DFLer Sandra Mason of Eagan. House Speaker Kurt Dowd said in a statement addressing the arrest that no Republican caucus money has been or will be spent on the race. Gerton is a retired National Guard soldier with degrees in criminal justice. A message left for him wasn't immediately returned. Brian Baxt, Minnesota Public Radio News.
The Chanhassen City Council has put the brakes on plans to open Paisley Park for public tours. Prince's home and studio complex has been scheduled to open to the public on Thursday. Citing concerns about traffic and pedestrian safety, council members voted last night to delay a decision on rezoning the property for a museum. Prince died in April without leaving a will. Bremer Trust, which is overseeing his estate, hired the company that operates Graceland to manage tours at Paisley Park. Attorney Patrick Mazarol, a consultant for Bremer, says the move may mean the start of tours will be delayed until winter or spring.
Certainly the council has done its job. You know, we want to recognize that it represents the citizens, and they have some additional questions they'd like to see answered.
The tour operator says it's already sold 3 months' worth of tickets online. Minneapolis police say they believe two shootings that happened downtown early Monday morning were gang-related. Police also believe they were sparked by a fight captured on video and streamed live on social media. Police say six people, including one juvenile, were injured. The city's political leaders say they're fighting crime and the perception that crime is a growing problem. Brant Williams has more.
Police Chief Janae Harto says the violence began near 5th Street and Hennepin Avenue as two groups of people believed to be affiliated with rival street gangs got into a fight.
They were live streaming the altercation, which alerted our suspect vehicle, who later came downtown a short period later and found the group. And the first shooting that occurred at 4th and 1st, there was two victims shot there.
Harto says investigators believe shooting suspects watched that video online and came downtown to join in the fight. The first shooting, which occurred near the intersection of 4th Street and 1st Avenue, is right next to the downtown police station. Harto says the department has plenty of video footage of some of the violence. She says in the second shooting, which occurred about 15 minutes later, there was an exchange of gunfire, which left four people wounded. Harto says five of the six wounded in the shootings are well known to police. Between them, they have been named in more than 100 police reports for offenses including assault and weapons charges.
The suspects disregarded the hundreds, if not thousands, of cameras we have downtown, the dozens and dozens of officers, uniformed officers, plainclothes officers we have downtown, and the fact that a precinct was right across the street. It's totally disregarded.
Harto didn't name the gangs represented by the suspects and victims of the shootings. However, court documents show that police investigators have focused enforcement on feuding gangs that are based in North Minneapolis. Police say those gangs often taunt or threaten each other through videos posted on social media sites like Facebook and YouTube. Mayor Betsy Hodges called gun violence in any part of the city unacceptable and restated her budget proposal to raise the authorized strength of the police force by 15 more officers next year. However, Hodges acknowledged that it will take more than a larger police force to stop the violence. She says the city plans to use federal grant dollars to support community-based programs designed to directly intervene in the lives of violent offenders.
I would like to couple that with the money I put in my budget so we can do a really good job of these community collaborative public safety strategies.
Hodges also called on state and federal lawmakers to pass laws that are more effective in keeping guns out of the hands of people who shouldn't have them. The latest crime statistics show shootings in downtown Minneapolis are down compared to last year at this time. However, Steve Kramer, president and CEO of the Downtown Council, says perceptions formed by some after incidents like the most recent shootings present a challenge.
So we have to drive home the reality of kind of what the data and the everyday experience of most people who come and live and work and play downtown have, without sugarcoating kind of the serious problem that we do have.
The section of downtown known as the Warehouse District has been the scene of late-night shootings many times before. Last month, two men and a woman were wounded by gunfire. And last year, police officers were nearly hit by a gun battle, which occurred near a light rail station. Several years ago, the city of Minneapolis cracked down on nightclubs that were the scene of violent altercations. In 2012, city officials say the owners of a club called Envy agreed to give up their liquor license following violent incidents linked to club patrons. And another nearby club gave up its liquor license and became an arcade. In 2014, a bar where a Minnesota Vikings player was wounded in the leg also closed its doors under scrutiny from the city. However, Joanne Kaufman, executive director of the Warehouse District Business Association, says often the people who commit violent assaults are not bar and restaurant patrons.
They are pretty consistently people who are coming into the neighborhood to either prey on our customers, our employees, our residents, our patrons, or who are coming in to cause trouble in our neighborhood for whatever reason.
Harto says surveillance video shows that the suspects and the victims of the shooting were not patrons at any of the downtown entertainment businesses. She says police recovered two guns and arrested one man. Brant Williams, Minnesota Public Radio News, Minneapolis.
Minnesota has hit the stop button on a $2 billion flood diversion project planned for Fargo-Moorhead. The project is designed to channel the Red River waters around Fargo-Moorhead during large floods. In denying a key permit, the DNR said yesterday that the project is neither reasonable nor practical. Opponents celebrated and local officials pledged to appeal the decision. Dan Gunderson has the story.
The Fargo-Moorhead diversion would be a massive project. Gates on the Red River and a 12-mile levee would hold back floodwater and divert it to a 30-mile-long channel around Fargo. But in the process, it would flood upstream farmland, homes, and communities. Minnesota DNR Commissioner Tom Landwehr says the negative impacts are too significant to justify the benefits to the protected area. He notes the diversion would protect a large area of undeveloped land in Fargo by shifting the flood impact upstream onto Minnesota land. Landwehr says depending on the current system of levees is the best option available.
Between the combination of those existing, proposed, and emergency measures, the majority of the developed portion of the Fargo-Moorhead area is given some protection.
Fargo Mayor Tim Mahoney expressed surprise at the decision, and he says the DNR proposal to use existing flood control methods is not an option.
I can't entrust the safety of our residents and our billions of dollars of property to sandbagging and temporary protection efforts. In 2009, we almost lost that fight, and that's just not something the community needs to go through. So I'm very disappointed that the DNR doesn't understand that as a community issue.
Mahoney says since the diversion is a federally approved project, he considers the lack of a DNR permit only a temporary setback for the project. Landwehr says local officials should not be surprised by the decision. He says the same concerns were raised in two environmental studies.
I think even the governor weighed in on some of those issues. And so I think these should not be a surprise that these are issues.
Upstream residents and local governments were hoping for this outcome. They've filed several lawsuits trying to derail the diversion. Nathan Berseth is a Richland County, North Dakota commissioner.
This is exactly what we've been hoping for, praying for, and it came true. You know, we tried warning the Diversion Authority that Minnesota didn't like this plan, that there are alternatives, but they continue to move forward with a project that now doesn't have the blessing or the permitting from the state of Minnesota.
David Morkin lives along the Red River, about 15 miles south of Fargo. He's chairman of the MnDAC Upstream Coalition. Morkin says his farmstead has never flooded, but would see floodwaters if the diversion is built. He hopes today's decision forces Fargo officials to take a different approach to flood control.
In the long run, we want Fargo to be protected. I do business in Fargo. I have children living in Fargo. We don't want to see Fargo go down in a flood. We just don't think that the plan they had in place was a feasible plan.
Fargo and Moorhead have spent hundreds of millions of dollars building higher levees since the record flood of 2009. But they argue a diversion is needed for long-term flood control. They say because of the region's flat landscape, levees can't be built high enough to withstand significantly larger floods predicted for the future. Fargo Mayor Tim Mahoney said he believes the Army Corps of Engineers has authority to build the project without Minnesota permits. The Corps can claim federal need for the project supersedes state regulations, but Minnesota officials argue this is a local project that doesn't meet the criteria for such a move for the Corps. The Army Corps St. Paul District Commander Colonel Sam Calkins issued a statement saying the Corps needs time to digest the information. Calkins expressed deep disappointment in the decision and said the Corps will continue to work to get this project completed. Fargo-Moorhead officials will meet this week to decide what their next steps will be. Dan Gunderson, Minnesota Public Radio News, Moorhead.
And that's your Polycast for this Tuesday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom.